This week I was feeling really cranky. You ever feel cranky? You're in Unity. How could you be cranky? So I was feeling cranky. I was just irritated. Just cranky. So I went into prayer. And I said, God, and I just poured it all out. And I heard, what makes you think this is about you? Just do my work and you'll be fine. I said, oh. Then I got crankier. Felt like Jonah. But yet we go through that. No matter how wonderful life is, I have the best job in the world. Woo! Woo, I do. I get to have fun and get paid for it. This is so wonderful. But no matter how wonderful it is, sometimes we just get cranky. It's part of being on the planet. Sometimes it just, no matter how wonderful, no matter how good it is. Most of us are familiar with a character in the Bible who we consider to be a rather cranky person. His name is Job. The book of Job is considered to be part of what is called the wisdom literature, found in the ancient Jewish writings. The wisdom literature seeks to address the question of how do we live on the planet? How do we get through this really weird little spinning ball that we're on? How is it worth to maintain ourselves day after day after day, living here with so many different challenges and problems? The wisdom literature's answer is always put your faith in God. No matter what is going on, no matter what's happening, put your faith in God. Why do you think it's about you? There's so much a bigger picture here. There's so much else going on besides you and the ego challenges that are going on. We have to widen ourselves to accept all the good and to see the bigger picture. I think we get cranky when we look at the little picture. We really expand ourselves to widescreen, if you will, cinerama. We'll see that life really is really pretty terrific. But the book of Job is a fictional telling of a man named Job, a very highly moral and very religious man who lived his life in complete integrity, according to the author. Integrity is from the Latin root word meaning whole and complete, to live a holy, whole life. You may remember that word from math class, integer, meaning a whole number. The whole, the entire thing. Entire is from the same root. Integrity, integral, is from the same Latin root. Because of Job's whole and complete faith in God, he has it all. A wonderful family, abundant livestock, servants, more servants than you could count, great friends, Bose speakers in the barn. I mean, that prosperous. A pied-à-terre in Jerusalem. He had it all. Everything. After introducing Job and everything that he had in the opening story, the next scene, it really does unfold like a synopsis, like a movie treatment in so many ways. The next scene goes up to heaven. And there we have God and his helper, the Satan, having a discussion about Job, looking down and going, Satan was not a bad guy early in Scripture. He was not evil. What he was a worker. The evil part came later after the Hebrews were in Babylonian captivity. The Babylonians had a religion called Zoroastrianism. They have two gods, one an evil god and one a good god. And so the Hebrews said, the evil one must be our Satan. And that's where that idea came from. But before that, the Satan was part of the heavenly council. He was the board member. If you've ever been on a board, ours is wonderful, thank God. But I have been on boards where the Satan sat in. His job, well, in the heavenly one, anyway. His job was to be the devil's advocate, so to speak. He didn't challenge God. He challenged the reliability and the frailty of human beings. So God is bragging to the Satan about how wonderful his guy Job is, how faithful he is, how loyal he is, and isn't he just the best human being ever? And the Satan says, well, duh. Look what you gave him. He's got Bose speakers in the barn. Why wouldn't he be a great guy? He said, I bet if things got a little rough for him, he would flaunt that in your face. And God said, okay, go ahead. Test him. The only thing is, you can't hurt him. So the Satan says, watch this. All of a sudden, Job's life is turned upside down. His donkeys and oxen are carried off by a foreign tribe, and some of the servants are killed by them. Then his sheep and other servants are struck by lightning and burned to death. Then his camels are stolen by another tribe yet, and more servants are killed. And then his eldest son's house is knocked over by a strong wind, and everybody in the house is killed. All his kids, gone. Don't you hate days like that? One thing after another. They were dropping quicker than actors on Downton Abbey. They're just left and right, just all gone. Did you hear O'Brien's leaving Downton Abbey? Oh my gosh. But I digress. So God and the Satan are watching all of this from their lovely perch, wondering what Job is going to do about all this now that all that was good in his life is gone. Job shaves his head. He tears his garment as they did when they were in mourning. But he continued to worship God. And he said, well, I was born without anything, and I have nothing again, but praise God anyway. God is delighted. He says to Satan, told you so. But the Satan says, oh, big deal. That was just stuff. Let's hit him where he really lives. That'll mess up his integrity. He'll curse you up a storm. Believe me, I've seen it all the time. And God says, okay, all right. Do whatever you want, but just don't kill him. God does not come off well in this story. Just saying. Remember, this is a fable. This didn't happen. This is a movie treatment. It's describing a spiritual truth that cannot be described in any other way but poetic or dramatic. God doesn't make bets with your life, all right? Just please know that. I bet that's what's happening today. God's betting with Satan against my life. No, that doesn't happen. You see, Bible literalism is the death of spiritual truth. Literalism of the Bible kills off any spiritual knowledge quicker than anything. Please don't literalize the Bible. Take it for the story that it is. So, back to the story. The Satan, yes, absolutely. The Satan comes up with a wonderful plan for Job. The heartbreak of psoriasis. If taking everything else didn't do it, have a skin condition. So this is driving Job insane. Absolutely driving him bonkers. Now, not only is he grieving the loss of his family, his servants, and the cattle, and the Bose speakers, but now he's sitting on a pile of ashes, scraping boils off his body with a broken pot. Just feeling cranky and sorry for himself. If you haven't figured out at this point, this story was written by a guy. How do we know that, Bible scholar that I am? Well, first of all, it has God and Satan acting like two high school jocks, betting on whether the girl really, really likes him. Yes, she does. No, she doesn't. Yes, she does. No, she doesn't. It was written by a guy. Number two, the second hint this was written by a guy was that the family was considered just property. The bow speakers, the barn, the donkey, the children, etc., etc. Children were considered property. They were just things. And the third most revealing proof that this was written by the patriarchal element of the time is that Job's wife is pictured as less than human. Back then, you have to remember, even up to a couple of hundred years ago, remember, I think it was the 100th anniversary this year of women getting vote. It's only been 100 years. So think beyond that, behind that, we had an awful view of women as being only having half a soul. They really believed that women had half a soul, not totally human. This is in line with a long tradition of women being considered less than human, less than intelligent, less than loving. Early in the Hebrew Bible, we get a lot of unloving women, a lot of women who just don't seem to understand the truth. It's important to remember that women were not considered people, so we have to come from that point of view that they were considered to be motivators, if you will. Eve, the very first woman, is presented as the reason the whole human race fell down. And why? Because she gave Adam an apple. Couldn't Adam think for himself, do you think? He could have said, no, thank you, I'll have a kumquat. And we would have been fine today. But it was Eve's fault. Even today, you'll go to some churches down south and go, it's your fault, women. You, Eves, and you know who you are. It's your fault. And that's why women couldn't speak in church, because the sound of women's voice drove men away from God. We also had Sarah, the wife of Abraham, who allowed herself to be given to Pharaoh because her husband was too chicken to tell Pharaoh that he was married to her. He said, ooh, she's hot. She said, she's my sister. You want her? This is your wife? And Sarah went, so Pharaoh took Sarah, and God struck him ill because of it. And Pharaoh said, you could have told me. She was your wife. Why didn't you? I don't know. Then Lot's wife, as they're running out of Sodom, just wanted to take one more look. Sounds like a song cue, doesn't it? Just one. And for doing that, you know what happened. She turned into a pillar of salt. They all sound like Bible versions of Lucy Ricardo. And then we have Mrs. Job. Lovely Mrs. Job. There sits Job scraping sores off his body. And she walks up to him and she says so lovingly, do you still hold on to your integrity? Curse God and die already. Yes, dear. And then she's gone. We don't hear from her anymore. First time we ever hear from her at all. That's how important the writer thought Job's life partner was. She was a walk-on. She was an under five. After she leaves, three friends come to visit and they grieve with Job. They sit with him for 7 days in absolute silence. Now, that's another indication that a guy wrote this. Women would say, what? Sit for 7 days without talking? Impossible. I was in North Miami Beach. I was living down there doing theater, and I was waiting in line at Wolfie's. Remember Wolfie's Deli down in Miami? Yeah, three people. That's how long ago it was. And there were these two elderly Jewish couples in front of me waiting for a table. The women go to the restroom, and the two men are standing there, not saying a word for about 3 minutes. They looked at each other, they looked away, they looked at each other, they looked away. Finally, one of them said, "So." The other guy said, "So." The other one said, "New?" "Eh?" "You?" "Eh?" "So." "So." "Hmm." That was the conversation for 10 minutes while the women were in the bathroom. I couldn't wait for them to come back. So yes, men can sit for a whole week without saying anything. This is possible. So they're sitting there, and then after a week, Job just starts talking and pouring his heart out, asking why he was even born to have to go through this. He doesn't blame God, mind you. He just wonders why it had to happen and why he was even on the planet. After talking for days on end with his friends, who actually said to him at one point, and it goes on forever, forever, "Well, you must have done something, or else God wouldn't have done this. It's all your fault, you know. What was your sin?" He said, "I didn't do anything." "Well, you must have, or else it wouldn't have happened." So they're arguing back and forth about this. Job finally comes to realize why it happened. It happened because he was afraid. He was afraid. It was his ego's sense of self-righteousness that interfered with him living a full God life. Then God comes out of the whirlwind, drops down, lights, twinkling stars, the whole nine yards. And he said, "You know, Job, I'm really a mystery." "I know." "Thank you. So don't try to figure me out. Just keep living your life." And then Job repents. As we know in unity, it means just to rethink what your life is about. And he comes to realize that he has not been living fully in God's good, even though he had so much around him. And God brings back to him, because of that realization, God brings back everything that he had and more. Well, he didn't bring back the children, they just had a whole lot more, which Mrs. Job was thrilled about. Like, so the story of Job and his strangeness, I mean, it's a really long story, and it takes a lot to get through it. And we could probably do a whole year on talking about Job. There's so much to it. But the story of Job is really one long, complex piece of poetry. It takes a lot of study. It takes a lot of contemplation to get through. There's a lot of Bible scholars today don't really understand. And by the time you're finished, you really do feel a bit like Job himself. It's like, oh, God, how long? How long is this going to go on? And I've done a few talks on Job through the years, and every time I do this, I look at the story, I find something new to share. So this time, I would like to take a look at Mrs. Job for a moment. You know, again, she's often vilified as a harpy and a shrew for not sharing her husband's faith, not really seeing it the way that he's seeing it, and says, "Look at what God has done to you. This is your God. Please curse him and get out of here. Just go die." That's what it seems to be reading. But think about it for a moment. Here is a woman who has lost everything her husband has. The animals they relied on food to have, the children that she raised. No, the men didn't have much to do with it. They were just property, but the woman raises them. The servants, her friends, they become friends. They helped her to run the place. And now her husband, her provider, looks to be so diseased, he's ready to check out, but he's not going anywhere. A woman's life was so connected and so reliant on her husband back then that she was just as affected, if not more so. Without the husband, she could die. But this woman must have been a woman of faith herself to first of all, be married to Job. She must have had the same realization of good that he had of God. And actually, because she was just a hair removed from what was happening to Job, she could actually be a little more objective about it. And of course, when reading the book, you don't get the benefit of getting the exact line reading that a character would have. But the only line she has in the story while he is sitting in misery is, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity?" Or in modern English, "Well, where's your wholeness now? Where is it? And does your belief of wholeness still exist? Is it still here?" And it's a question we always have to ask ourselves here on the planet. If I have a challenge or a crisis, where's my wholeness? Where's my faith? Where's my belief that God is at work, even though I don't see it or feel it right now? In our metaphysical understanding of the Bible, men in a story represent the thinking analytical nature of our being, and women represent the feeling intuitive nature. Now, of course, we have both thinking and feeling in all of us, men and women. But in a parable or a mythological story, the genders are clues to the journey that we're taking, what the author wants us to know about where they are in consciousness at the moment. Job represents the analytical part of our being, always looking outside and analyzing what's going on, thinking about everything that needs to be done for life to move and work smoothly on the outer. So he prays all the time on the outer. He pays penance to the temple for his children's sins, making sure all of his social responsibilities have been taken care of, paying the servants and so on. Everything outside has been taken care of. Job thinks, if I meet all my obligations, everything will be fine and my life will continue as it is. So how are we like Job then? Well, we pray and meditate. We give responsibly where we receive our spiritual food. We attempt to speak and live in the most positive, joyful way that we can. We are so careful not to do or say anything wrong, so not unity. Like, oh, cancel, cancel. And if others do the same thing, we lovingly correct them. Don't say try. Don't say can't. Don't eat meat. Don't feel blue. Get over it. Don't cry. What were you thinking that caused that accident? You only meditate how long? Ooh. You only gave how much? Ooh. I'll pray for you. And then I'll be happy to tell you how to improve your life. I've been coming to Unity for a month. I can tell you everything you need to know. That is what we call metaphysical malpractice. Don't do that. It's as irritating as being called a sinner by a fundamentalist. Because you don't do it in the right way, which means my way. The teachings we share here in Unity are not for you to go out and tell other people how to live their lives or what they're doing wrong. The Unity teachings are for us to change our lives. It's for me to know the truth and to follow what God within me has for me. We're all here together to remember that truth, that these are teachings for my unfoldment. Jesus himself said, what do you care what he's doing? Follow me. If you just focus on yourself, you have more than enough to take care of. If others see that you're doing something, if your life appears to be working, by their fruits, you shall know them, Jesus said, then they'll want you to share. It's like, you seem so happy. You seem so together. You see, life seems to be working. What are you doing different? And then you can share, well, here's what I'm doing. But self-righteousness, whether it's Christian, Buddhist, Muslim, Jewish, Unity, atheist, is not helpful to you or to anybody else. Self-righteousness is really the ego attempting to convince itself that this stuff called spirituality is a great way to control. Oh, before that we tried everything else. Now I'm in a spiritual life and I can use that to get people to do what I want to do. We don't think that way, but that's really what we're doing. I would take that into prayer if I were you. What are you doing? What are you doing with that? Oh, God told me to tell you. When somebody says that, run. Run so fast. God knows where I live. God has my address. God knows how to get in touch with me. Self-righteousness comes from doubt and it comes from fear. That's why Job had that famous realization, the thing that I fear has come upon me. The thing that I fear has come upon me is consciousness. It's cause and effect. That which the energy I'm holding, I'm simply drawing to myself. Why did all these things happen to Job? He knew why, because he was afraid of the things being taken away. He was putting energy into his fear, and the more energy we put into our fear, the more we draw that thing into our lives. Mrs. Job, our intuitive knowing, says to him, where's your faith? Where is your faith? Where's your belief? Do you believe that you're whole? Do you believe that you're prosperous? Do you believe that you're meant to have a joyful life? Do you think that you have to live your life all alone simply because you live in New York City and there are no available people here? Or do you believe that your right and perfect mate is here, waiting for you to know the truth about you? That God is here no matter what may be going on, Spirit is at work. There are people here today who are looking wonderful, smelling good, very well groomed, beautiful smiles and teeth. And yet the person sitting next to you who is so well put together may be in incredible pain. May have come here today because they didn't know where else to turn. Because the confusion is so great, they don't know what to do. They're in doubt as to whether God is really here for them, because in my prayer and my meditation time, I just don't hear or feel anything. And I'm ready to chuck the whole thing. Nothing is working. Wondering where the rent is going to come from that was due on Friday. Wondering if there's any money for groceries this week. Will I eat this week? Any number of people may be thinking any of these here today. Like Job, we think, I've done the affirming, I've done the praying, why do I still have this condition? I've been holding to the truth that God is everything I need, but God seems to be playing games with my life. The truth is, we have all come to the planet to prove the truth of God's power, to prove the truth that there is no power on the outer. There's only God power within. We have to remember the astonishing truth of our divine identities. We are abundantly blessed when we affirm and know the truth, that there's more than wonderful. My life is more than wonderful, more than abundantly blessed, more than vibrant health, more than love. It's all about God. It's all about your oneness with the truth of the universe, that there is no lack in any child of God. You are a dynamic and awesome child of God who has the God-given power inside of you to bring forth anything that you desire. You have to believe it. I have to believe it. If we don't, we're using our power to hold it away. But that power can only flow from letting love come forth, not fear. We will never worry ourselves into success. We will never find the love of our lives by being anxious about it. Because we know how sexy anxious is, don't we? Oh, that hot, anxious mess over there. Let me go talk to them. No, there's a wall. There's a wall around that individual. We often do things, even in our spiritual practices, because we're afraid of what might happen if we don't. If I don't tithe this, I'm not going to prosper. If I don't meditate in a certain way, my prayers won't work. I'm afraid if I don't have the right words, God won't respond to me. The chaplains do it so much better, so I'll let them do it. They have really great words, but I don't have any. Tithing, meditation, affirmation, all helpful tools that are very good, but they're not the whole ball game. These are only spiritual tools we have to awaken to the truth. If we're coming from love in everything that we do, we will not be afraid. If I'm coming from love, I'm not afraid to give. If I'm coming from love, I'm not afraid to accept my healing. If I'm coming from love, I can open myself up and know that I'm not going to be hurt by another individual coming into my life. God is always here. The unlimited good of God, the unlimited love of God we call grace, is always longing to move through you and into your world. And Jesus himself reminded us that the greatest commandment is, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength, with all your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. You got that, you have everything. There's nothing else you need to know. We just need to practice it, put it into effect. That is the complete fulfilling of God's divine law. Job was so focused on the outer sense of wholeness in his rituals and his sacrifice and his penance and all the other stuff that he was doing, he lost sight of his inner integrity, his inner wholeness. His intuition and the voice of his wife says, where is it? Where is your remembrance of your wholeness, of who you are? And then she shocked him by going deeper, saying, curse God and die. In other words, do it or get off the pot. Make a choice. Do something one way or another. I shared about a friend of mine whose grandmother had cancer, and she was really feeling sick, and she said, "Okay, God, listen up. Take me or leave me, but do something." Next day, she felt better. Week later, she went to the doctor, and he said, "We can't find the cancer anymore." Make a choice. Do something. Choose your life. What is it you want to do? Curse God and die. Do it or get off the pot. Move. Move your life. Accept that the power of God is within you, even though it seems hopeless, or move some energy. Don't be in agony sitting there. Get up and do something. One of our Unity members, a number of years ago, made her transition. She had a recurrence of a cancer that she had thought was long taken care of. It was in remission for a number of years. She held to a belief that she couldn't heal from it. The doctor was saying, "Look, you know, it came back, but we can do things for you." They said, "Every day something wonderful, something new is being discovered. God is stronger than any cancer cell. Others are surviving too, and you can. Just put your mind to it. Work on it." But she got it into her mind that there was no hope. She said, "I don't want to do this again." So she was out of her body and on the other side in a matter of weeks. She made her transition not from cancer. She transitioned from something else. But she let go of the integrity of the life force within her by saying, I don't want to deal with it anymore. It wasn't one of those peaceful things of going, "All right, I can accept this and I'm joyfully moving on." She was angry and she was mad and she was full of fear and she said, "I'm not doing this." She was gone. We are powerful beings and we choose to stay or go. It's up to us. Make a soul choice to leave the body, again, can be healing. Some people say, "You know what? I've done it. My soul knows this is what I came to do, and now I'm on the other side doing something even more wonderful." But leaving because of fear and anger really doesn't help the soul. I mean, eventually we're going to learn anyway, but we can do it now. We can turn our lives over to Spirit and say, "God, what would you have me do now?" To curse God means to deny the power of God within you, to inadvertently use your power to bring about the very thing that you fear has to happen. You know, Mrs. Job was very wise, and it was in her statement to her husband that began the healing process. I think it woke him up. I think he said, "Oh, okay, I've got to come back to myself here." The lesson here is that if we hang in with God, no matter how awful anything might appear, God will appear as the healing. Okay, God doesn't heal. God's like, "I'm going to heal you. You're so good. Have a healing." "Oh, boom, thank you." That's not how it works. God is the healing. The awareness of God at work in every cell, every atom, every molecule, every fiber of who I am awakens it to bring the healing forth. God is your abundance. God doesn't give you money. God is the very thing we're looking for. God is the love in your partner who is coming into your life. You're not looking. God's not going to give you somebody. God's just going to show up as that someone. Remember, it's God appearing in your life when you are awakened to the truth of God. Our job is to know that God is here, always actively at work within us, and that our prayers are being answered. Don't second guess God. Don't try to create what the scenario will be. God knows what to do and how to do it. We don't. We don't know how this thing is going to unfold. You just hold to the truth and watch it happen. There was a woman named Anya who was the oldest daughter of 8 children from Poland. Her parents were working to send their family over here to the States, and they finally got enough to send their first daughter, Anya. They sent her to live with an aunt in Baltimore, and they wrote to her every week telling her they were hoping to join them all soon. But it wasn't long before Hitler came to power, and the long letters telling about the family birthdays and bar mitzvahs and the weddings quit coming altogether. A few years went by, and the war finally came to an end, and stray survivors from her hometown shared with her the news that she knew but didn't want to hear. Her whole family had been wiped out by the Nazis. She was devastated, of course, but she felt the best way to honor their memories was to have a large family herself and to name each child after one of her siblings. She soon found a man named Saul, fell in love, and they began to plan a big family together. But they discovered, to their great disappointment, that they weren't able to have children. Well, Anya was just beside herself with grief. The only thing she ever prayed for was to have a family of her own flesh and blood, and it wasn't going to happen. Where was God in all this? She had her family taken from her, and now she couldn't have children? Talk about Job. She said, "This is too much. I can't deal with this." One day, the couple began to talk about adoption. She had considered it on and off, but inwardly she was railing against the idea. She kept affirming, "I don't want somebody else's child. I want my own flesh and blood." "Well, since that isn't going to happen," she said, "let's see what the adoption agency has for us." So they came up to New York, and after being told that a teenage girl was giving up her baby, they came up, but they found out that the grandmother was going to be taking the child instead. Again, Anya felt like, "Joe, Mike, what are you tricking me here? Get me all the way to New York and there's nothing? Why is this happening?" The agency official said to them, "Look, I do have an 8-year-old girl who needs a home. She's very bright, very affectionate. They met her, they found her to be quite wonderful, but she just couldn't deal with how old she was. She's at 8. She's grown up." So they went home, and after a year, with no other baby being available, nothing was coming to them, and with a real longing to raise a child, she called the agency again and wanted to know if this girl was available. The girl's name was Miriam. The agency said, "Yeah, but she's 9 now. She's getting up there. And her little brother has been found too. We promised them that they would be adopted together." So they came back to New York, met the little boy, just fell in love with him right then and there. So they adopted the 2 children. They weren't hers, but now she had children. They drove back to Baltimore. As the children were looking around their new home, little Miriam noticed some family pictures that Anya had put on the piano. The little girl turned white as a sheet and began shaking. She said, "Why do you have a picture of my grandmother on your piano?" And Anya said, "What do you mean, your grandmother?" She ran to her suitcase, and the little girl pulled out the exact same picture that was on the piano. It was Anya's mother. Miriam then gave her another picture. She said, "And this is my mother." Anya screamed, fell to her knees, and recognized her sister Sarah. She didn't know it until then, but she had adopted her dead sister's children. Her own flesh and blood. The very affirmation she was making, she drew into her life. Her prayers were answered, but not in the way she thought they were going to. Your prayers are being answered, but not in the way you think is going to happen. It's going to look better. When I was a kid, I always pictured myself on Broadway with a red curtain behind me. Oh, look. I did. Of course, I was like dancing and stuff. But dancing and singing. But it happened. That was the picture I received from Spirit. I kind of misinterpreted it a little bit, even though that did happen for about 20 years or so. But one day I realized that I was talking, and I was on Broadway, and there was a red curtain. I went, "Oh, look at that." It turned out a little different, but it turned out better than I could ever imagine. And even better for you. Think of the most wonderful dream, and think, how can God make that better? Well, God has the idea. God has it waiting within you, but you've got to let go of your fear. You've got to let go of how it's going to happen. Simply let go and say, "All right, God, I tried it my way. We'll do it your way now. Show me what I need to do today, tomorrow, the next day." God is at work bringing your deepest desires into manifestation. Your job is not to ask why. We're like little kids. Why? Because. The whys of life are a mystery. You're not going to know them until you need to. The questions we are not to ask, we aren't asking is why, but what now? What now? Why there is cancer or AIDS or Alzheimer's or whatever disease is not going to help your healing. But the power of God within you is the healing that you're looking for. So we affirm, "God is healing me now. Show me what I need to do." Why you aren't on Broadway or at the Met yet isn't the question. The question is, God, what do I do to bring that dream into expression? What joy have I been suppressing? What do I need to do now to move my life forward, regardless of how it looks right now? So you don't have the money in the bank at the moment. Tomorrow, if you let go and open yourself up to God, it may be there and more. Why don't I have enough money yet? Why isn't my right apartment here? Why is my mate not showing up? I keep coming to Unity. You'd think they'd be there. They may be, but you're asking why is keeping them away, and they probably leave before you even notice them. Open yourself up. Hang around the back for a little bit. Look at the bookstore. All single people, go to the book table after the service. Not now. Wait. Let go of the fear that the healing, the show, the money, the home, the man or the woman isn't showing up. The fear that my good can't or isn't coming will bring you down that path of lack and limitation over and over again. Close your eyes. Breathe in. Your job is to know that my life is more than wonderful at this very moment. That God is at work, and with your faith that it is happening, you're going to see it sooner than later. Breathe in and know there is no failure in God. Have faith in God will blow you away with how good your life is turning out. And we do that by singing our way into our time of quiet with, I am so blessed for all that I have, all that I am, and all that God is. Relax, breathe light, love, peace, power into your body right now. Let it go. Let go of the fear. Let go of the question why. And simply accept, I am so blessed right now. That I am.
I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful for all that I am. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful.
One more time, a little quieter. All that God is. So blessed to remember God is at work always, 24 hours a day, every second I am here. God is sustaining, upholding, nurturing, feeding, loving, guiding, prospering, healing. My job is to awaken to that truth, to allow God, full and free flow of my consciousness, to not question why or to doubt that God is here, but to say yes to all that God has for me. Release the fear that God is not here. No matter what the challenge may be, God is here. No matter the appearance, God is here. No matter the facts, God is here. Breathe in. Replace fear with love. Replace doubt with joy. Replace anxiety with serenity and the peace
that passes all understanding. Because with God, all things are possible. With God, I can do anything. With God, my holy path of success is waiting for me. With God at work, all is well and continuing to unfold in a perfect pattern of all good. If you're going through a health challenge, I invite you to let go of any pain, any fear. Simply open yourself up to the love and power of God and give it all over to your Creator. Silently affirm, I am vibrantly healthy, strong, and alive. I am vibrantly healthy, strong, and alive. Breathe that truth in. Let it take hold. That is the truth of your being. That is the truth we affirm all week long. The truth is you are a prosperous being of light and power. There is no lack in a child of God, only in thinking. So we change our minds, we change our thoughts, we change our belief. I am abundantly blessed right now and for eternity. I am abundantly blessed right now and for eternity. Breathe that truth in. Open your heart to receive. Open your mind to receive all the good waiting for you.